And so this week is once again another opportunity for us to realign kind of our vision and our focus as a church and as a community. And Andrew last week spoke about the importance of community. He spoke about the relevance of small groups and life groups. And so we want to give some time to get very practical this morning and speak about how we as a community can do our life groups or our community groups better. And so sometimes our Sunday services are intellectual. Sometimes they're stirring in our hearts. This morning's aim is supposed to be quite practical. Of course, hopefully we will be stirring you as well. And so in order to do that, we've asked Sue Gush, who leads a life group in the church, to come and minister for 10 to 15 minutes as she comes up. You can welcome her. And she's, along with her husband, Tim, been in the life of the church for a while. And I'll let her introduce further, but she's involved in this wonderful ministry. So thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, everybody. Oops, sorry. Nice to see you this morning. I'm Sue, as Mark said, and my husband, Tim, has just moved. we've been part of Church on Main for just over 13 years. We've got four children. Our eldest is turning 14 in exactly a week's time. He's a boy, and then we've got three girls going down, ages 11, 8, and 5. We love this church. We love being part of the community in this church, and I hope that as I share with you today our journey, that it will just encourage you just to knit into the community of the church more. It's great coming to church on a Sunday. It's great receiving ministry from the Word and worshiping together, but if that's all there is, I promise you, you're missing out on something far deeper and far greater and far, in a sense, maybe even more worthwhile for you. Building relationships with other people. So just to tell you about our journey in terms of cell groups, life groups, home groups, whatever you want to call this, a small group, soon after Tim and I were married, I think 5 weeks or so, we went overseas. And we got involved in a church there very quickly, simply because we had South African friends. We went to London, and in joining the church, we decided that we wanted to get involved in what they then called cell groups. And amazingly, if any of you know London, there was a cell group that met in our road. So it was incredibly convenient, and for 6 months we were part of that cell group, and it was a way of just, in a strange country, in a new city, of making friends. After 6 months, we actually moved from North London down to South London and changed home groups or cell groups then. And that cell group really had a profound effect on us. It was probably the first time that we really did community with other people. This group we would meet up with on a weekend. We didn't have a car, and we would go out into the country and find a pub and go have a coffee, go for a walk. We also had an incredible couple leading us. We were, as I said, very newlywed. We were 6 months into marriage at that stage. And they were an incredible influence in our life just by the example of a young married couple. They never spoke about marriage. They never preached on it. They never pulled us aside and said, do you need help? Are you doing okay? They simply modeled how a husband and wife should relate to each other and treat each other. And that really, we still honor them to this day, just for that profound, profound effect it had on us. We were away from family and other influences, and yet God really used them to speak into our marriage and, yeah, into our young lives. So that was our first two home groups, and later on in the same church, we went on to hosting a home group in our home, which was fun. We came back to Cape Town nearly 14 years now, and after a while came upon Church on Main and felt at home here almost immediately, and also decided that we wanted to knit into a home group quite quickly. The difference was, I think, that we, having experienced cell groups overseas, we had a good idea of what we enjoyed about them and how we thought they should be happening. And we decided that we wanted to join a home group rather than looking for somewhere where we were going to feel that it's going to meet our needs. We wanted to also look somewhere where we could add value. And I think If you're looking for a home group, that's also quite a nice way of going about it. Not only what can it do for me, but what can I do for this home group? How can I support it? How can I add to it? How can I become fully part of it and involved? So we were involved in two home groups before we started leading our own. It's another thing about a home group is that it's a really great way of getting connected with the diversity within the church. So we've been in home groups with students, we've been in home groups with young professionals, we've been in home groups with married couples who are not married, married couples who have families, we've been in home groups with people who divorced, we've been in home groups with destitute refugees, we've been in, just a wide variety, and it's been a really good opportunity just to meet people from other walks of life. Naturally, as parents, we kind of congregate to other parents. You're meeting parents through your children, through school, through going to Treasure House, through sitting in the mom's room. That's a very comfortable place for us. And home group was a really good opportunity to meet people who we wouldn't normally have connected with. And also, not just to meet them, but to connect with them on a deeper level. So that really added value to our lives. Around about the time that our third child, our second daughter, was 6 months old, and we were asked to start up our own home group. And this really suited us because we were finding it logistically challenging. We were taking three children out at night and trying to put them all to sleep in the same bedroom. And inevitably one of us would end up sitting with children and one of us would be in the lounge having a good time, and home groups are becoming a little bit more challenging. So when we were asked to start our own home group, we thought, well, yes, we would love to do that. We were fully on board. But we also thought, well, if we're struggling to make home group work for us as a young family, I'm sure there are other people out there and other families who are also struggling to make home group work for them as a young family. And so we started a family-friendly home group. It wasn't a family-exclusive home group. We've had single people in our home group as well, but it has been predominantly, there were predominantly families, and we ran our home group from 6 to 7:30 in the evening. By this, we could include children. Moms took turns to cook meals for the kids, just simple macaroni and cheese, hot dogs, and the families would arrive, we'd feed the children, and Tim would be making coffee in the kitchen, and they would eat, and then we'd put a DVD on for the kids around about 7, quarter past 7, and we'd have a 45-minute short and sharp time to get together. And over the years, I think we grew. We grew in our confidence of running home group, of allowing things to be different. I think kind of stepping out of the mold was a little bit of a challenge for us. Are we still doing this right? Is it okay to do things a little bit differently? And I'm glad that it's proven that it is, because I think hopefully it's definitely given us confidence to try new things into the future as well. I also just wanted to bring up now, at this point, something that I really learned at this time. For the first few years of us hosting and running home group, I really used to encourage Tim in the way he led. Love, I think you should do this. I think you should look at the Bible. Why don't we try this week? Why don't we try this next week? Hosting was easy. We love having people in our homes. We enjoy welcoming people in, we enjoy doing meals, we enjoy that sort of thing. But leading was feeling like quite pressurized. And I was, in a gentle way, always trying to steer Tim in the direction that I thought that this is how home groups should be run. And I really just got to the point where I realized that I was trying to push him into the way that I thought home groups should be, or the way that I'd seen other people model home groups, which was perfectly correct. But it wasn't the way that God had designed him to lead. Tim is very pastoral. He's very good with connecting with people. He's very good with just sharing what's on his heart. He's not a teacher. He doesn't like step-by-step Bible studies. And as soon as I stepped back and kind of just, not that I released him, but I didn't put the pressure on him to be someone who he wasn't, but allowed him just to step fully into what God had called him to do, I also felt that our home group just flourished and became less pressurized from the leading point of view. And I really think that's also just where we began to grow. I also want to, at this point, just honor those people who have been part of this home group, our last before we closed. I'll get to that just now, because they also really caught onto this vision of what home group is in terms of community. Do you mind if I ask them to stand? Mark, guys, Sonia, Ailey, guys at the backs, yes, please stand up. Okay, can I just, let's give them a clap. At the back as well. These people figured out that doing home group is more than just arriving on a Thursday night and having coffee made for you and having your kids looked after. These people worked out that actually this is about community. We were amazed. We've gone through many seasons in different people's lives, and we would hear like 2 weeks later that somebody needed meals taken to them, and our home group had just got together and were taking meals. We didn't even know about it. Families needed kids lifted around. It was just happening. Someone would organize a hike up the mountain and send a message out and say, I'm going walking, please come join us. And really, I think leading a group of people like that who catch the vision of community is really easy. So yeah, it was with a little bit of a heavy heart that we then decided to close our home group earlier this year. Logistically, it was becoming quite challenging. We had, if everyone was there, we would have 20 children and 20 adults, which had a little bit of a strain on us, but being families and having kids as well, it didn't necessarily mean that every week everyone was there. We also found that our son had now entered high school at the beginning of this year, and high school, as if anybody has children there already, just brings on a whole new dynamic into your week. Suddenly things are happening in the evening. There's just greater demand on you as a parent and lifting and carrying and fetching and sorting your teenager out now. And we started realizing that we were finding home groups a challenge in terms of having older children now. And perhaps, like we had figured out 8 years ago, there were other people out there who were also finding it difficult to connect and to fit into a home group now that they had teenagers and older children. So we closed our home group, and our members are filtering into other groups right now. And we're in the process of figuring out this next step. We're actually really excited. We know that God has plans and purposes for us in all our different stages of life. And we're very excited to see exactly where this is going to go. So far, it's been on quite a casual basis. We've been having friends over for meals. We've been trying to connect with other families who have older children. We're hoping into the future to perhaps host a teenage parenting course, maybe to connect with parents when our youth group's up and running, to be able to connect with parents in the coffee shop on a Friday evening. We don't exactly know exactly what that means, but we're very excited just to see where it's going and what's happening, what's going to happen in that area. And if I could just encourage you that there is no strict formula for home groups if you're thinking of leading one. If you find something that works for you, the chances are that there are other people out there that it's going to work for as well. And if you're thinking of joining a home group, there are a diverse number and variety of home groups in our church. And look for one that not only suits you, but that where you feel that perhaps you could add value as well. Whether it's because you're able to bake a cake every week or bring biscuits along, whether it's because you're able to offer somebody a lift, because you feel that it's a place where your children are going to be happy. Just look out for somewhere where you can add value and become part of the community. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks so much, Sue. And obviously, it goes without saying, having you up here shows that we commend you and Tim, but just to say that in words as well, we do commend you. And along with many of the other home group leaders and heroes of the life of the church, the heroes, as Andrew says, in the life of the church are those sitting here amongst us who are doing these types of things on a weekly basis. And so if you can just bear with me for another 20-odd minutes, I want to take some time just to minister into this area as well. And the phrase that I have for my little 20-minute little quick kind of exhortation to you this morning is doing life together. Doing life together. You see, we see that the scriptures, so much of what the scriptures ask us to do as Christians, so much of what we're called to do requires us to be in a genuine relationship with other believers. Not just relationship with people at work or people in our school communities, but in real, genuine relationships with other Christians in the same community as us. And for us, as a community, one of the ways in which that is enabled to take place is in our home groups, in our life groups, in our community groups, connect groups, smaller groups, if you didn't get what Sue was referring to there, smaller groups that meet weekly in our home, ideally, to enjoy each other's company and to fellowship and to grow together spiritually. And so we've used this analogy a number of times, and Andrew mentioned it again last week, the idea that we all have two lungs in our body that help us to thrive and to exercise. And one of the analogies that we've used is that when we look at the New Testament church, we see that there's two lungs that the New Testament church had. There was a big Sunday-type corporate gathering. They met in their temples, okay, and probably on Saturdays. For us, we're meeting our old shopping center buildings that we've changed into a hall that we can worship in. And there's this side of the church, this lung, this corporate coming together, this moment to celebrate, this moment to do things that are appropriate for what we need to do as a big community. Have times of praise and worship, have times of exhortation and teaching from the scriptures. And have times of brief, and I say brief because that's all there's time for, brief fellowship. The type of fellowship that the scriptures demand us or require us or put an imperative upon us as believers, the type of fellowship that we're required to have with each other cannot possibly take place in a 10, 15 minute, although please do stick around afterwards, cannot possibly take place in a 10, 15 minute coffee after a service. And on a Sunday, we can't not do what's important to do on a Sunday. We can't not give time to teaching and preaching God's word. We can't not give time to corporate worship and corporate faith and corporate stirring ourselves in that way. And so how are we going to then exercise that other vital, as Sue was saying, maybe for some of you here this morning, maybe at this stage in your life, a more important part of your Christian walk, that community, that sense of knowing, that sense of relating, that fellowship. How are we going to experience that? And that's where we need another lung. That's where we need a reality where we actually are connecting with other believers in a relational, real way. Now, I know that there's many ways of doing that. Home groups is just one way. Of course, it has to be a smaller group by nature. It has to be a group that you can connect with and relate to. And so we can have early morning prayer meetings. We can have early morning business, guys, get-togethers. But whatever it is, it needs to be a systematic, a continual group of people that we're committed to, that we're walking with, that we're doing life together with, that we're praying with each other, supporting each other. And so for us as a leadership, we just sense that home groups is one of the ways that we can really put this back on the front burner. It's not the only way, serving in a team, serving in Treasure House ministry, whatever it is, not the only way, but it's one of the ways that for many of us, that's the reality, it's the connection point to this side of our Christianity. So let's then look together at Acts chapter 2 very quickly, and then we're going to maybe look at one or two other verses. We see actually that Jesus himself modeled this, first of all. Now, Jesus was a rabbi, and a rabbi like no other. He claimed an authority that no other rabbi ever claimed. When other rabbis came into a synagogue, they would require the local elders to affirm their teaching. But Jesus comes into synagogues in like this, corporate gatherings, and he affirms his own teaching. Before he preaches, he says, "Amen, amen, I say to you." And so all the elders, Greg and Nick, sitting in the front row, who's supposed to affirm the traveling rabbi, say, "Who do you think you are to speak with your own authority?" Make no mistake, Jesus was a teacher and an exhorter. And if we're following his footsteps, then we need to do what we do on a Sunday, exhort and teach the scriptures. So Jesus was a rabbi, he was a teacher, but he was not just a traveling teacher or preacher. Jesus' life was done with his disciples. He modeled this. He wasn't just a teacher and a preacher. He was very much a teacher and a preacher. But more than that, he walked with disciples. He ate with them. He talked about his sermons afterwards. When do you get to talk about a sermon? When? When do you get to ask questions? Hey, Andrew said that on Sunday. How do I apply that? What does that mean? I didn't quite understand that. Well, when do you get to do that? Jesus was doing that with his, that's part of the learning exercise. That's part of the teaching exercise. Jesus was doing life with his disciples. He wasn't just hanging out. He wasn't just preaching with them. He was connecting with them, walking with them, traveling with them, living with them at times. Now, we are not first century Jewish followers of Jesus. And so we can't expect to have the same kind of culture. We have a different culture. They walked around, we drive cars. They were able to meet daily. We're not necessarily able to meet daily. But in some way, if we are followers of Jesus, we must have this element also, in some way. Otherwise, we just have one lung, just one lung. And as Andrew said, you can have one lung and you can survive. You can survive on one lung. You can survive on just the one side of Christianity, the corporate or the personal, the intimate. But you're not going to be able to climb mountains, as Andrew was saying. And so Jesus sets this example for us. And then what we see, unsurprisingly, because Jesus sets an example, his disciples follow in his footsteps. So in Acts chapter 2, verse 42 down to 47, we read this about the early church. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who were believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. Isn't it wonderful to hear just that testimony this morning about how communities in our church were standing with each other when there was need? When someone was in need of a meal, when someone was in need of prayer, when someone was in need of support, the community was standing around them. Some of you immediately want to check out when you read that and you go, oh no, I can't subscribe to this type of socialism. This is not, the Bible is not teaching socialism here. The Bible, you got to read the Bible in its entire context to understand that God is not for necessarily capitalism. He's not for socialism either. He's for us working hard and for earning because we work hard, and then for sharing and for opening our hands and opening our hearts. And that's what was taking place in this community. There was an opening up, but it happened because they were a community. Let's read on. Distributing the proceeds, verse 46, the all-important verse. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes. They received their food with glad and generous hearts and praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added daily to their number those who were being saved. You see, sometimes some of us like the small elements. And sometimes I meet people who say, I want to join a small church because then I get to know everybody. Everybody gets to know my name. And other people are like, I want to be part of a big thing. I want to be where everyone knows our name, where we've got clout in the city. Where when I mention the church to my friends at work, they go, oh yeah, we know that church. I want a sense of that. So there's these two sides of the coin, that we want to be part of something big that's influential, that like has respect. And then we also want something. And sometimes I meet people who are just like, they only want the one. And what's interesting is often people say, the New Testament church, that's what they were like. They connected together. But you know, the New Testament church was both. On the day of Pentecost, 3,000 people got saved. Now, that's a mega church. Hey, 3,000 people got saved. Sometimes some people look at the mega churches over in America and they're so dismissive. I say, who are you to be dismissive about a mega church like that? Peter and the apostles were leading a mega church from day one. 3,000 people got saved. And yet in the midst of that, they had incredible community, incredible connectivity, incredible oneness, incredible sense of doing life together. Doing life together. Why? Because they not only met in the temple courts, they met in their homes. I can't read all of these to you, but if you go and look in your New Testament and read the one another verses, these are some of the passages. We're supposed to bear one another's burdens. We're supposed to encourage one another. I can't give you where all these come from. We're supposed to stir one another up. Stir one another up to love and good works. We're supposed to teach and admonish one another. Admonish is a warning, a strong warning. And that's an injunction upon all of us, not upon the teachers who teach on a Sunday. Every single one of us as Christians are to teach and admonish. Now, when are you teaching and admonishing a fellow Christian? We're to comfort one another. We're to agree with one another. James says we're to confess our sins one to another. Confess our sins one to another. You see, so much of our Christianity requires community, to be in community and to be in genuine relationships. And I guess we're saying as a leadership that in a little way, we all, I sense, not only the leadership, but all of us here this morning, I sense we've all been a little bit guilty in this last season. For those of us who've been walking with Church of Man for a while, we've all been a little bit guilty, I think, of neglecting this vital element of church. We've all been a little bit guilty of neglecting the importance of doing community together. And so what we're trying to do in this last Sunday and today, before we go into a preaching series in James, we're trying to once again put an emphasis on the incredible importance of doing life together, of meeting in our homes and connecting. This is not a heavy. It's not something of, you guys, we need to pull up our socks. It's a thing of, we're hoping that there's a desire in our hearts to experience this type of Christianity, to experience it for ourselves, to taste and see that it's good, and a desire for us to get a conviction about it. Now, I know that marketing 101, right? You need to know what you're missing out on in order to buy in, right? You need to. And so in many ways, I think we need to not only ask ourselves, what's the cost of getting involved in a community group, but we actually need to ask ourselves, what's the cost of not? What are we missing out on, as Sue was saying? What's the cost of not getting involved? We'll become more and more self-centered Christians. Our Christianity will become more and more individualistic. We'll become isolated, not connected. We'll lack spiritual growth, because so often our spiritual growth doesn't just come from teaching on a Sunday. It comes from hearing each other's faith stories. You've got a faith story. Every single one of you here have a faith story of what God has been doing in you. How are you using that faith story to build someone else up? We can't all grab the microphone on a Sunday. What happens is it takes place in our homes during the week. We share our faith stories. We build each other up. And our Christianity doesn't become inward and isolated, but we become connected and dependent. You are used by God to meet someone else's needs. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Your gifts, whatever God has put inside, you're used by God to meet someone, and your needs. Oh, you think you don't have needs, some of you here this morning. You do. Some of you thinking, I don't need more friends. This is not about needing more friends. This is about doing life together as a church. As Sue said, many people in your home group won't be natural friends. This is not about you needing more friends. You say, I don't have any needs. No, you do have needs. And when you get connected into a life group, you get to have those needs met and fulfilled by your brothers and sisters. And you grow together and you teach each other. So what's the cost of not getting involved, guys? You know what the other cost is that we expect too much from a Sunday meeting. Because we have a sense in our hearts that Christianity is supposed to be real, relational, warm, connected. And we're not actually prioritizing that. And so when we do come to something like this, we then expect this to fulfill all of that. And it's like, oh, the preaching wasn't fantastic that Sunday. Or no one said hello to me. No one welcomed me. Well, if you're in a life group and you're connected every week and that there's a sense of authenticity to that, you don't care if you walk through the front door and no one welcomes you or the sermon doesn't quite hit the mark, because this isn't the moment when you need to grow as a Christian. It's not the only moment you get teaching from God's word. You're doing that in life with fellow brothers and sisters. It takes the pressure off of this moment being the be-all and the end-all to your Christian walk with God. It's unhealthy, friends. In many contexts, we do have an unhealthy view of what we expect our Sunday gatherings to be. The reason is because we've turned our Christianity into a very individualistic type of Christianity, and we've divorced ourselves. Okay, so I said I was going to be 20 minutes. Andrew told me this morning, less is more, Mark, less is more. So let's get real. Let's get real. What is standing in our way? What are some of the things that are stopping us? I know some of you have been burned in home groups before. The leader suddenly left. I'm not referring to Tim and Sue. The leader suddenly left. And you had invested so much of yourself into this group. You had poured out hours and days and years into getting to know people. And all of a sudden, the leader leaves and your group is left destitute. You were so committed and no one else was. Maybe things got awkward when people who were in need started asking for help in an unhelpful way and got awkward and you're just like, I don't want to deal with that. Maybe one person in your group was just talking way too much. And even worse, the leader lacked the courage to put an end to it. So you're like, I'm out of here, I'm booking out. Can I just say, let's go again. The cost is too big. The cost is too big if we don't. One of those one another verses comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, here we go, forgiving one another. If you've been burned in a life group, can I ask you to exercise that verse? To forgive one another and to go again. So some of us have been held back by our past experiences. Otherwise, two of the most common things, and Sue referred to one of them quite a lot, is I think busyness, and young children. For some of us here tonight. Busyness and young children. So let me just say this about busyness, first of all. The fact that you are busy does not mean that what you're doing is necessarily important. I mean, syndicates of cartels are very busy, I imagine. I can imagine some of the corrupt business leaders and politicians in our nation are very, very busy people. You see, so often we use that, I'm busy, I fly to Joburg, I'm working hard in my business. I'm very busy. I get home late and I'm tired and I'm very, very busy. Now, busyness doesn't necessarily mean the thing you're giving yourself to is, now, I'm not saying don't be traveling to Joburg. Don't work hard. I'm not saying don't work long hours. I'm not saying don't be a great example in the marketplace. I'm not saying don't take your business to the next level. I'm saying, come on, let's have faith that we can do both. And maybe let's realize and own up to the fact that sometimes our busyness is because we prioritize the wrong things and we're busy with our own agendas and we're not busy with God's agenda. Let's get busy doing God's work. Let's get busy doing community. Let's get busy getting to know each other. And yes, guys, it is a cost. And no matter how creative you get, there's still a cost to come into home group. I'm all for creativity, doing home groups differently. We did it ourselves when we led a group. And I think we can get more creative in the way that we enable ourselves for busy people in our time, in our culture. But at the same time, friends, let me just say this. No matter how creative you get, no matter how clever you get, if you're going to commit to a home, if you're going to commit to a community, there's going to be a cost. But the cost is worth it because the cost of not doing it is so much greater. So much greater. I'm all for busy businessmen. I really am. And I commend those of you who are busy at your jobs. And I sympathize. You say, Mark, it's unfair. You're busy gets to be building the church. Our friends say we're always busy. They can never have games nights with us, our friends. They have to book us like 2 months in advance. Mark, you're so busy. And they say it's unfair because your busyness is building the church anyway. So it's like community, whatever. But I've been there. I've sat in audit rooms when I've had to miss community moments and I've felt the heartache of it. I've been in moments when I've walked out of NASPA's head office here, when I've left the audit team. We'd been working until 12, 1 o'clock every night, and I had agreed with my manager that come weekend I was going away with my church leaders. And I walked out of that office at 5 o'clock, leaving my whole team there, abandoning them, with my team leader looking at me, thinking, I agreed with you. I agreed with you. I've been in that tension. I sympathize with you. I'm not here to scold. I'm not here to, less is more, Mark, less is more. Okay. Okay, so children, last one. Sometimes for some of us children, I love the idea to be creative. But let me just say this to parents, as a fellow parent, and I'm far from, my kids are very young, so it's very dangerous to speak as a parent. As a parent, you set the tone. As a parent, you make the decisions. There is an incredible danger. If you are allowing your children to set the spiritual tone in your household, I can't come to an evening meeting because I can't come to an evening group because I've got children. What you're saying is your children are making the decisions for your home. Lauren and I, as some of you know, lead the evening meeting. Now, the evening meeting starts at 6:30. It ends at 8 o'clock. We have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. When our kids were a little bit younger, Lauren was constantly arranging babysitters. We don't have any family in the city. No grandparents. Our closest relatives are in Somerset West, so there's no babysitting going on there. Now the kids are a little bit older. They sleep in my office every night. Some people say to me, Mark, you're so lucky you have kids that sleep. No. We make them sleep. We decide. We decide. We're the parents. They don't have a choice. We are called to do God's work. We are called to do his things. And we want them on a journey. It's not a harsh, if you've seen me as a dad, hopefully you understand, I'm not a harsh dad. If anything, I think I'm too weak sometimes. I walk through the front door and Lauren needs a strong authoritative dad and I'm like, hey. I was so ministered to a few years ago when, Dorothy, when you stood here and you said, when you were ministering as a single mom, and you shared how you had this realization that you were called not to be a friend of your children, but to be a mother to your children. And I've held on to that. So parents, can I ask you to be parents? I know children are different, and I sympathize. I know some children are harder than others. But you know what? When the principles of finances are taught in the scriptures, it doesn't matter how much money you have, the same principles apply. I understand children are different, but I don't see different principles. We set the tone. We make the decisions. Our children sleep because we're the parents. Okay, where to from here? There are some extreme cases, I'm sure. My mom, for example, grew up where she wasn't able to be in a home group because my dad wasn't supportive and she was just struggling just to get us to church on a Sunday. I understand. But for my mom, in my mom's defense, she was highly involved in prayer meetings. She always has been. She was highly involved in women's connecting groups. There was an authenticity to her relational reality. That's a good sentence, isn't it? I don't even know if it makes sense. So let's do life groups together. Let's do life together. So if you want to practically get more involved, come and chat to myself. I see Leon and Shona aren't here this morning, but you can come and chat to them. You can also come and chat to any one of the leaders. Probably the best way to get connected is to connect with someone that you know. If you know someone in a life group, get connected with them.